I'm your host, Annie Bowles, and this is News du Jour. Welcome to News du Jour. You may be wondering, why am I, Annie Bowles, here hosting this podcast? I usually start by telling people I'm a political baby. You see, my parents met working on Capitol Hill. By the time I was two, I had been in my first political commercial and even got lost crawling around the West Wing. Don't worry, Al Gore found me. My family then moved abroad when I was nine, and I attended an international school in Brussels with kids from all over the world, and it is this type of global perspective that I also bring to our show. I graduated from American University in DC after studying political science and art history, as well as interning on both sides of Capitol Hill. I even interned down the hall from where my parents met. I'm now pursuing a professional certificate in journalism at NYU in conjunction with Rolling Stone magazine. I guess I was always that friend in the group who cared deeply about not just what was going on politically, but also globally. I often kept my own friends informed through high school and into young adulthood, so I guess I've always done a version of this show. I'm genuinely passionate about following the news, and I'm here to break it down for you guys every weekday. We always strive to be a calmer space to get your news, or as one listener put it, like getting your news from a well-informed bestie. I'm so glad you're here. Do I even remember how to do this anymore? I was like, where are my cords? Good thing I just literally unplugged my microphone and stuck it under my desk in its exact same format with everything, you know, dialed into the right spot, because I would not remember how to do that now. By the way, guys, hi. It has been way too long, and I used to end my show letting you know that I had a rescue pup with me underneath my desk. So if you hear any noises, it was him. Well, my dog of 12 years passed away last summer, and it is just not, my whole life has not been the same without him. That said, for Christmas, we did get August a puppy. And so he is here with me to comfort me today doing this without Rhett. But he's even louder than Rhett because he's crazy. So Rhett was a rescue pup who had been abused. There's Spanky. He was a rescue pup who had been abused. So it was just a very different situation where he was very clingy to me. He never wanted to be away from me. So that's why I let him record with me. Whereas Spanky over here is very well adjusted. He's had a very happy life. So he's wild and totally different temperament. But I'm going to go put him somewhere where he can't hurt himself or us or this podcast. BRB. Okay, so let's try that again. Anywho, the past couple years since I stopped podcasting, you guys, have been challenging for sure. A lot of growth, a lot of pressure, and a lot less creating, which I really, really miss. And I've had so many life updates that I haven't really been able to tell you guys about. August is growing like a weed. He's a very happy, healthy 3-year-old boy, and I could not love him more. My beloved rescue pup, like I mentioned, Rhett, he passed away over the summer at 12 years old, and it really broke my heart. But today we have our newest addition to the family, Spanky Domino Bowles, who you just heard. But instead of at my feet, he's typically in my lap. This puppy was rescued primarily for my son, and he's a tiny dog. My son was insisting on a tiny dog, and even though I'm a big dog girl, this tiny, tiny Chihuahua mini Aussie mix has totally stolen my heart. And honestly, he's been my emotional support animal at times coming into our lives. You know, during finals, he did the early mornings with me and was just such a cuddle bug and a source of comfort. In 2025, we got a survivor out of prison, you guys, after 3 decades almost of being in prison. And the judge said she should never have been in there in the first place. And he released her the same day. That survivor was Lisa Wright, and I am proud to say she's a dear friend of mine now. We meet up for coffee dates and to grab lunch, and I just feel so lucky to have her in my life. She's such an incredible woman. She's so smart, and she's so grounded. But that is a direct result of you guys, my listeners, who signed petitions and made phone calls and took all the calls to action during the campaign for Oklahoma Survivors Act. Those of you who took an action, you helped to free Lisa Wright. She would still be in jail. She'd still be in prison right now if it wasn't for you. So that win belongs to all of us who had any part in getting the OSA passed. And I am so proud of this community and what we accomplished together. In 2025, I also saw Bono live in concert, which was, you know, incredible. It was a private concert, so I was like 2 rows away from him, like could feel his sweat landing on us. It was insane and totally surreal. I also officially survived my 1L year of law school as well as the terrible twos at the same time. So I feel like I need a medal for doing those at the same time. And I'm just honestly, again, really proud of myself. And that's where, you know, I say it was challenging. Like, that's not easy. That's challenging for sure. And I have a chronic illness on top of it. So there was a lot at play, a lot going on at any given time. But now I'm over halfway through law school. I'm rounding that corner and I can see the end, the light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm like, come on, let's go. Full steam ahead. Finishing my 1L year was something I'd honestly been like afraid of for a very long time. Like it was like, I was intimidated by the concept of a 1L year because my dad had, you know, just hyped it up like, oh, it's so grueling and so hard. And it really is. Like, he was not lying. But I shouldn't have been as afraid of it as I was. And again, it's just something I'm so proud of myself for, like, conquering. And it's behind me now, which is crazy. Also, in 2025, I got to watch my sister marry her love on a beautiful summer Saturday in upstate New York. And it was the most balmy, you know, gorgeous wedding you could imagine. So, you know, 2025 was defined by a lot of peaks and valleys. I'd say it was like extreme hard things and then extreme, you know, beautiful things with Lisa Wright. And, you know, the year kind of ended off on a sad note. Obviously, if you follow me on social media, you know, we were not able to get April Wilkins relief under the Oklahoma Survivors Act, a bill, a piece of legislation that was written and passed for this woman, did not succeed in getting her out. And that is the direct result of grudges being held and, you know, I don't want to use the C word, corruption, because I'm not even sure that that would be the right word, but the ruling straight up does not make any sense, you guys. I had friends at law school coming up to me more than once saying, Annie, I don't understand this ruling. Can you explain it to me? And I would say, no, I can't, because it makes no logical sense as per the law, as per, you know, the legislative intent, none of it. So we're going to dive into exactly what happened, where April's case stands today, and some big news that I'm very excited about and a new cause for us to support. Let's jump in. So with April's case, I'm not even sure where to start this. Basically, where it all began is, I guess, the first day that we are able to file under the Oklahoma Survivors Act for relief, that very first day, we filed April's and only April's. All of the other survivors, we filed afterwards, some, you know, weeks or months afterwards. However, April was the last one to get a hearing date, and we would have these quote unquote pre-hearings, which, by the way, are not a thing. Like we had like 5 of them, in which Tulsa DA Stephen Kunstweiler would promise that next time we'd set a hearing date. And next time we'd set a hearing date. And next time we'd set a hearing date. And next time we'd set a hearing date. It never happened. Okay. So finally, we had to file what's called a relief for habeas corpus, which basically means like she's not, her case isn't moving and she's being held improperly because the judicial system is just basically holding up her case. And this was after some other nefarious events. So I'll go ahead and backtrack a little bit. Before we filed that, it became apparent what Stephen Kuntzweiler was waiting for, which was the judge we were initially put under, he retired. So Stephen Kuntzweiler probably knew this judge was retiring, didn't want our case to be underneath him, and kept running out the clock. So that's why we kept having these pre-hearings and pre-hearings and pre-hearings all the live long day. Finally, when that judge did retire, our case was put under a judge who was actually a former prosecutor on April's case, which was the exact outcome that Stephen Kuntzweiler wanted. However, of course, seeing the blatant ethical problems with that and the blatant conflict of interest, we asked the judge to recuse themselves, which is something no attorney ever wants to do. But Colleen McCarty, our fearless leader, she stuck her neck out and she asked him to recuse himself because of the very basic conflict of interest that existed here. And just to explain the law a little bit, I did not understand this before law school. Judges have to choose to recuse themselves. Like, there's no like method of forcing them to recuse themselves. They have to choose to do so. And when you as an attorney suggest that they should recuse themselves, you're basically saying, I don't think you can be impartial on this. And so it comes across as a little like condescending. However, again, Colleen was brave enough to stand up and do this because it's a blatant conflict of interest. And fortunately, the judge did choose to recuse himself and he did the right thing. So snaps for him. That is like, you know, just a very honorable thing to do. So then our case was moved again under Gutten. So Judge Gutten ended up being the judge who heard April's OSA hearing. And again, this took like the lead up time for us to get under Judge Gutten. It took longer than the lead up to her actual murder trial. You guys, this is just a resentencing hearing. Like, there is no reason it should have taken over a year to get her in front of a judge. That was absurd. And again, I think you'll just see with April's case, there's always this sort of like different treatment when it comes to April. She is very much someone that they've made into like a pariah. You know, they want to see her behind bars no matter what, at all costs. And I don't know. I do not understand why this is where they want to dig their heels in. She's a vegan grandma. She has no record prior to meeting Terry Carlton and no infractions in prison afterwards. She is a very peaceful human being. So, you know, I don't know where they're coming from, basically, is something I'd like to understand more, actually. I don't understand why on earth they would oppose this woman getting out. She does not have a single prison infraction after almost 3 decades of being in there. I've been told that it's very difficult to be the case, that basically if you drop a piece of paper on the floor, you get an infraction. So April is just someone who, she's a model inmate. Before she met Terry Carlton, she was a model citizen. She has a medical degree where she was designing cutting edge prosthetic limbs for amputees. That's what she was doing with her life prior to meeting Terry Carlton. And so basically the idea that she's somehow dangerous to society is ridiculous, to say the least. But anyway, so once our case was moved under Judge Gutten, we finally got a date set for, I think it was September 3rd through 4th, where we would do this OSA hearing. And I was there for every minute of these hearings. And you guys, again, challenging. That's just the word I'm gonna give. I've been friends with April for a long time now. I interviewed her for this podcast about everything she went through. But to sit there in a courtroom and walk through the SANE exams to hear about vaginal tearing and where she was bruised and
a federal judge testified that when she met April, she was all one bruise. All one bruise, you guys. This woman went through hell and back, and no one would help her. There's a reason that the podcast about her story is called Panic Button, because she wore a panic button around her neck because she was that afraid for her life. She was calling the police every other day. They literally told her, "We can't babysit you." She had two different protective orders out against Terry, and two other women had protective orders out against Terry. So he was a very, very dangerous human being who the police failed to apprehend, failed to prosecute. So I think April's case maybe goes back to their failures as a Tulsa law enforcement entity, and maybe that's why they've dug their heels in. I still don't understand why she has been such a focal point for them, but maybe that's why, because she points to their failures. Sitting in those courtrooms, though, sitting in that courtroom, it was torment for someone who, again, is a friend of hers. And then for the case to be decided the way it was unreal. So this is how Judge Gooden decided the case. He said that day, I sat there and I watched him say that he believed all of this was true. He believed in all of the abuse. He believed she was a survivor of extensive domestic violence, extensive abuse. However, he said, because our expert witness was not professional enough, he could not give her testimony any weight. And without that expert testimony, his hands were tied and he just could not rule in our favor. Which, you guys, makes no sense for so many reasons. First of all, there's no rule under OSA that you have to have an expert's testimony. All the judge has to determine is that they are indeed a survivor of domestic violence and that the crime was linked to that domestic violence, which she killed her abuser. So it's, you can't avoid it. Like, of course it's linked. So if you believe she's a survivor, she deserved relief because she killed her abuser. That's obviously related. The abuse was obviously substantially related. So, and that's the legal term. Anyway, so further problems, though, with this ruling are that our expert was extremely professional. She is a vice president over at the YWCA. She's testified in courtrooms before, and her testimony was given weight. She is literally on the board, you guys, in the state of Oklahoma, that for the state of Oklahoma, that reviews every child death in our state. That is how expert she is in domestic violence. She reviews every DV-related death. Okay, so this woman is extremely expert, and not only that, but she's extremely well thought of and respected in the DV space. So this ruling outraged every DV org that you could imagine, Palomar and the one in Tulsa. I can't remember the name of it right now, but there's a primary one in Tulsa where, you know, they've testified on our behalf before also, and they were outraged by saying she wasn't professional enough, like that she wasn't qualified, was absurd. So again, this ruling just did not make any sense. And so when you're faced with something like this, you know, you go internal as a team and you say, what do we do? And again, our fearless leader, Colleen McCarty, and the legal team, which I'm not a part of, I was social media, and I still, that's that, if I was still working with Appleseed, that'd probably still be my role. But they put their heads together and they filed something called a motion to reconsider. And this is kind of like an unofficial thing, apparently. But it basically just asked the judge, like, hey, are you sure? Like, are you sure about that? Because that doesn't sound right, you know? Please reconsider what you decided. And again, this is kind of like sticking our necks out in the same way that, you know, asking the former judge to recuse himself. This was a pivotal moment. But basically, during that time, it came to our awareness that two ADAs from this office had bought April's home, bought her home that she used to live in, that she was abused in, and they planned to get married in that home on Halloween, quote unquote, for the creepy vibes. Yes, they wanted to say their nuptials and pronounce their everlasting love on the site where April was sexually assaulted and dragged in the door by her hair, as witnessed by multiple neighbors, where she was stalked extensively. Her abuser used to be on the roof, you know, stalking her and trying to surveil her phone calls. Like, this is where you want to start your married life together? On Halloween? It was just so absurd. And it felt like they were taunting her, taunting us. And this was just not something we could stay quiet about. And we needed to put it in the official public record. Now, we have had a laundry list of other infractions that were much smaller, that, you know, unethical things that this office had done. Stephen Kunstweiler lied about our bill to legislators, and they forwarded us the emails. That's how we got them. And we would see that he was lying about the extent of our bill and what it would do. And then further, he lied to the public, saying that Terry Carlton had a protective order on himself against April, which was never the case. He never even filed for one. So we don't even know. He pulled that one out of his ass. But either way, he was lying to the public through the press, and he was lying to legislators. So we'd chronicled a bunch of different infractions. There are other things as well. You can see it in the filing if you're interested. But basically, all these things we'd compiled over the years, we added the Hallowedding, as we called it, to the list. And we filed something called a motion to disqualify. And what a motion to disqualify is basically you're saying this prosecutor cannot be objective. They cannot be neutral. And that is very much a requirement for prosecutors in particular. They need to be disimpassioned. They need to be sort of separated from it so they can view it objectively. And that obviously is just not something this team can do. Like, if they, and further, we heard about them kind of taunting people in the legal community about this, you know, and it was just something that was so disgusting to us and deplorable to make a domestic violence survivor's abuse into a joke. Into something to taunt people with was just so wrong on so many levels that, again, we wanted it in the public record. We knew this probably would not be granted, but we were like, we gotta try because this is insane. And Tulsa deserves to know what they're dealing with. And if your loved one is a DV survivor, how they might be treated. So this is something that we took very seriously, and we filed a motion to disqualify right after the motion to consider. So both these things were on the table, just like out there. Again, very controversial things. Like, to say I was stressed was like naughty. Like, that's such an understatement. I was just constantly on edge, like in sort of a panicky mode. Because we had so much riding on this. You know, we've been riding for April for literal years now. And this woman has been through everything, and she deserves relief. And so to, again, like, be have these two sort of big motions out there. And the day before Thanksgiving, Judge Gutin came back with his ruling. He went through pages and pages and pages on why he was not going to reconsider. His response to the motion to reconsider was pages and pages long. And actually, what's interesting is that in this, he said she was not a DV survivor. There wasn't enough evidence that she was a DV survivor, which, like, there's enough evidence, guys. Same kits that directly link Terry to having raped her the night of the murder, like sane kits performed by medical professionals in like the proper ways, like she was raped by Terry that night, you know, and tons more evidence. The federal judge who came and testified that April was all one bruise, and you know, there were just countless pieces of really intense and like solid evidence. Like it was a mountain. It is really hard to avoid that she was a DV survivor. And so, but also he had said that she was. He had acknowledged at the day of his ruling that she was the victim of extensive domestic violence. And then he turned his back on that and changed his tune in responding to our motion to reconsider. So that was very, again, like, I don't want to use the word corruption because I don't think that's the right one, but like, why did you like change your mind on that? And that's something we're going to circle back to. But the motion to disqualify, so the Halle wedding and the lies to the public, the lies to the legislature, all of that mountain of evidence against Kunstweller, he gave us a one sentence response. He said, because he was not going to reconsider, the point was moot. And it's not moot because now we have to deal with this motherfucker in the appeals court. So it's very much not moot. But maybe he meant it was moot to him, I guess. But either way, a one sentence response to such blatant ethical violations is it's a red flag. That's a red flag. The fact that you don't even want to hold a hearing to see like what was going on and hear a little bit more about it is telling and scary, to be honest. Makes me wonder if he was at this wedding, because we know Kunstweller attended that wedding in April's home. He's admitted to it. So, and I've been told that it was like a networking event of the freaking Tulsa County Courthouse in April's home where she was abused. So anyway, when we filed the motion to disqualify, or before we did, we had asked for records of Judge Gutten's text messages with Stephen Kunstweller, because again, we could not understand why these decisions were so sideways and seemed to defy the law and legislative intent and logic, to be honest. Like, they didn't make logical sense. And so we wanted to understand the connection there a little bit better. And we uncovered text messages where they were discussing news articles that had come out about April's case. And this is unethical and like against ethical rules for two different reasons. The first reason is it's an ex parte communication, which basically just means that anytime a judge talks to one party in an active case, the other attorneys have to be present, or else it's what's called an ex parte communication and is highly, highly unethical. Should not happen. So they were talking without Colleen present. About this case. And again, ex parte communication violates the rules. And then a second way that they were violating the rules is that Gutten was telling Kunstweller that he had read this piece, both two different pieces about April's case. And judges during an active case are not able to be doing outside research on it. It has to be things that are entered into the record so that all parties can, you know, have a say and object and make sure that what is being entered into the record is true and factual. And again, is on the record. Doing outside research is, you know, strictly forbidden. I remember even Justice Ginsburg talking about like not doing outside research. Maybe she got in trouble for it at one point, but like even Supreme Court justices are not allowed to do outside research. It has to be stuff that is verified in court as being accurate. And so Judge Gutten was doing that. He was reading two different news articles about her case as it was ongoing, and that is not allowed. So these are two different breaches that we found out. We only got these text messages revealed to us after the motion to disqualify was decided on. So this was maddening. Like, we weren't able to put that in. And, you know, this would potentially help us disqualify both of them, not just Kunstweller. And so anyway, this was a bombshell that came after. But these things are just kind of par for the course in Tulsa. I hate to say, but Tulsa is known for a lot of, you know, sort of judicial things going sideways. I like to joke that, you know, they actually recently found that there was black mold in the elevators there, or escalators maybe, and then there was asbestos in the ceilings. And so I'm like, maybe this is why they're so crazy there, because we just get the weirdest, strangest, you know, logic defying rulings from that courthouse. Maybe this is why. But there's like, for example, there's two other cases where black men, I think that's important to note, black men who were exonerated, had DNA evidence that exonerated them of serious crimes, both murders, I believe. And Stephen Kunstweller still to this day tries to go after them for that same crime that they've been wrongfully convicted of, wrongfully imprisoned for. And he's still chasing them down, trying to prosecute them. Like, instead of going and finding the real bad guy, the real guy who did it, he's just like beating a dead horse. The victims' families even have come out saying, we don't want you to do this. Leave that man alone. There's two different instances of this going on with Kunstweiler. And so, you know, Oklahoma is number one in the country in domestic violence. This is something we've talked about extensively on this podcast. But Tulsa County is the number one county in the state. So they are quite literally the domestic violence capital of America. But instead of going out and going after all of those abusers who are committing very real crimes all the time against women and children, the DA's office seems to be spending their time settling old scores and, you know, holding grudges against people who are innocent or in need of help. This is unreal to me. And it's such a waste of our taxpayer dollars. It's such a waste of, you know, energy. And it's truly an abuse of the judicial system, in my layperson opinion. This is not what I would want Tulsa officials to be spending their time on, as someone who grew up in Tulsa and who loves Tulsa very much. All of this brings me to where April's case sits today. So April has some new attorneys, you guys. This is so exciting for me. So if you remember, I had Nikki Adamondo on the podcast back when we were trying to pass the Oklahoma Survivors Act. And Nikki is the coolest woman. She's a survivor. And her bill, the DVSJA in New York, is what our bill was based off of. So you can scroll back into our feed and hear that interview with Nikki and Michelle. But I was actually the first interview she gave after coming out of prison. And guys, she had people like ABC and, you know, all these like big name shows like trying to get her on. And she gave me her first interview, and I will always, always, always be so honored for that. And she said it was because she knew I'd be a safe space, and that means the world to me. But anyway, I met Nikki and Michelle in person, actually, when I went to my sister's upstate New York wedding, which was so exciting because, again, like, we felt like family at this point. Like, we'd been through so much together. They'd really supported our bill and publicly and everything. And actually, something interesting to know is that the DVSJA, Nikki's bill, was passed for Nikki, but Nikki was denied under her own bill the first time around. Sound familiar? Just like April. We passed the Oklahoma Survivors Act for April Wilkins, and she was denied under her own bill. So you might be asking, then how the heck is Nikki out now? So she had a big wig attorney read about her case in the newspaper, or at least this is what I've been told, is that she had this big wig attorney who's like a big deal in New York read about her case in the newspaper and said, I'm going to take that case. I'm going to take that case pro bono, and I'm going to get her out right freaking now. And that is exactly what that man did. And he got Nikki out on appeal under her own bill. And this man has generously decided to take April's case. Sorry, guys. It's just been a really long road to get here. And, like, even friends of mine who are in law school, like, you guys don't even know the half of the story. Like, the first half of this story happened before I was even in law school. So I'm tired. And I'm tired of having to fight for something that shouldn't even be a fight. This woman is so incredible. She's so peaceful. She's such a great person. She's president of the freaking Inmates Council. She's a vegan grandma, like I mentioned. She is just beautiful in every way, from like her soul and who she is as a person to like her beautiful face and smile. She's just a ray of sunshine. And she's been someone that I actually look up to in my life, which is crazy to say. And I could not be more grateful to have April Wilkins in my life. And anyway, I'm so honored that these New York City attorneys are going to be coming in to do April's appeal, because this ain't their first rodeo. They know what they're doing, and they're coming down here, and they're, for my law student friends or just for everybody's education, they're going to be doing something called ad hoc vice, which is basically where you work with a local attorney in order to represent someone in a different state from where you are barred. So they will be working with Phoebe from, I think her firm is called She Rises. Anyway, I'm really excited to see what they can do for April and where this case takes us. I'm hoping to be running a more front-facing sort of effort for April, because I know that that was really pivotal in Nikki's case. So I'd love to just keep you guys informed as things go along. But at the end of the day, I have a much bigger and more exciting announcement. Colleen McCarty, my former boss at Appleseed, who she did all of this. This fight is her fight, you guys. Alongside legislators, she wrote the Oklahoma Survivors Act. She got it passed. She went and she was the first person to bring April's case into public view in so long through the Panic Button podcast. And she argued April's hearing and had to walk through all of that horrific evidence in the courtroom that day. And she is someone I look up to in a way I can't even put into words. She's the reason I'm in law school today, because she also went as a mom. And she was the first person outside of my dad who really told me they thought I could do it. So I'm sorry, guys. This is just, all of this is very highly emotional for me, because I literally would not be in law school if it wasn't for April and Colleen. And today, or yesterday, Colleen is, she's announcing her run for Tulsa DA. And someone who is a woman and a survivor being at the helm of Tulsa's judicial system would completely change the decades worth of insane rulings, insane, dare I use the C word, corruption. This is my opinion. It's not her opinion per se, but we have seen absurd things going on in that courthouse. And she is looking to change that. She's looking to be fair. She's looking to be impartial. And she's looking to stop the endless grudges against people who don't deserve it. But most importantly, Colleen is looking to go and get the actual bad guys, the abusers, to prevent someone from being in April's position in the first place. If they had just done what they were supposed to do and gotten Terry, the actual abuser, April would never have been forced to defend herself. And so cutting things off at the root is what Colleen is looking to do. So this is our new fight, you guys. If you believe in April's case, the Oklahoma Survivors Act and what it stands for, if you want to see a more just DA for Tulsa, who listens to logic and reasoning and follows the law and can act impartially, help us get Colleen elected. So here are some calls to action. The number one call to action is donate, donate, donate. Even if you are not a Tulsa County voter, doesn't matter. You can always move things with your dollar. So definitely vote. Her website is live. I will have a link in the show notes. And if you are a Tulsa County voter, you have to be a Republican to vote in the primary. So she is running as a Republican against Kunzweller, who is also a Republican. And so their election is going to be June 16th, where they are head to head. And from there, whichever of them wins will run against a Democrat, you know, in the fall election. But the date that matters for us is June 16th. So please, please, please donate as much as you guys can to help remedy this situation. And, you know, again, for the worst county in the worst state for domestic violence, let's put a survivor in charge and see what happens. Let's put a woman in charge and see what she can do. Because these abusers are not the people being targeted. It's the victims that are being targeted. And this is something that we can change by electing Colleen McCarty. And again, you have to be a Republican to vote in the Republican primaries. However, you can, if you are interested in this, she's not advocating for this, but if you are interested in changing your party, you can do that until March 31st, if that's something you want to do, where you can change your party to be a Republican so that you can vote in that primary. Also, knocking doors, I think, is going to be something that's going to be really pivotal. So if you are boots on the ground in Tulsa, or you're going to spend some time in Tulsa, please consider volunteering with Colleen's campaign. Again, I will link that information in our show notes. Also on my social media, I'll make sure to have permanent donate and volunteer links in my Instagram bio. So if you want to donate a couple months from now, you know, you get a fat paycheck and you're like, great, I'll throw some money towards Colleen and making Tulsa a better place. That link will be there for you. But that said, it's a sprint, you guys. This race is a sprint. You know, June is right around the corner. And so it's all systems go. We need all hands on deck. So basically, if you are in a position to volunteer, if you're in a position to donate, we need it, and we need it now. So thank you guys so much for listening. I'm so excited for Colleen's new chapter. I'm so excited for Tulsa, because this is someone really stepping up to the plate and saying, I'm going to make this a better place. And just for the record, Colleen is probably, if she were to get this job, she's probably taking like close to a 50% pay cut to do this job. So just for the record, this woman is a badass attorney, and she could be doing a million things with her time. And instead, she is fighting for Tulsa to be a better place at her own like personal financial expense. So I just really believe in her, and she's my favorite boss I've ever had. And I look up to her so much. And if you guys have any questions about her or April's case, please let me know. Or if you have ways that we can tap into the Republican community in Tulsa and make sure that they are plugged into this race, I would really appreciate any resources. Thank you guys so much for listening. And that for today is the news du jour. The quote of the day is, "The man in the arena. It's not the critic that counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the woman who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, who spends herself on a worthy cause, who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if she fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that her place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat." If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on whatever podcast platform you use to listen. A rate and review on that platform or a shout out on social media would mean the world to us and help us to be able to keep creating the news du jour and reach more people who need a calmer space to consume the news. But the best way to support all of our work is to become a patron at www.patreon.com/sugarfreemedia, and that is also linked in our show notes. You can follow us on social media at newsdujour.podcast on both Instagram and TikTok. You can follow my personal account at It's Annie Bowles on both platforms as well.
Broadcasting from